Bruce Pratt here for Sports Lit 101. And for the last few weeks, we've been talking about this wonderful collection edited by our friend Travis Vogan and Samantha Shepherd called Sporting Realities. And Bruce, last week we began getting on some of the contributors to this book. Who have we got this week?
Today we have Justin Hudson, a writer out of the D.C. area, who wrote which may be my favorite of all the chapters, a lot of great chapters, To the Black Athlete Dying Young, documenting mythology and mythologizing of the deaths of Len Bias and Ben Wilson. Justin, welcome to the show. When I first talked about this chapter, I read the A.E. Housman poem To an Athlete Dying Young, which is something I can rarely get through. I get near the end of that and I always choke up. What really I found so interesting about this particular, your take on this situation is, we've seen for 8 years on the show doing this how society and societal pressures and norms change sports. But these two deaths, they didn't change much about sports necessarily, but they changed a lot about society. They changed a lot of things that were not good, especially for African Americans. And I was wondering if you could just sort of give us a little background on how you got into this.
Just being a kid, being in the sports and being African American myself, I noticed the Len Bias story was told a lot. I actually first learned about the Len Bias story on the episode of Saved by the Bell, the kids' TV show. And Ben Wilson was a story I counted a couple of times. There was a Reebok commercial, or maybe a Nike commercial, that used the story to promote inner city peace. And also the great basketball player Derrick Rose is from Chicago, and actually from St. Mountain High School, where Ben Wilson went. And there's actually a cover story on Sports Illustrated that's talked about how his brothers tried to protect him to keep him from the same fate as Ben Wilson. And so these stories just keep getting resonated throughout. I'm someone who always liked history and sport, and I was just really drawn to those stories over time.
Well, the Len Bias story, certainly in New England, has never gone away. It was going to be the next great Celtic at the time. And we got a very sanitized version of Len Bias from the media at that point in time. I mean, he played at Maryland. We know he's one of he played at the same time as Michael Jordan, one of the best ACC players of all time. And then this notion that somehow one day he made one mistake and that led to his death, which we know not to be true. But it also then led to the war on drugs getting a real boost, if you will, by President Reagan. Could you explain how that worked for our listeners?
Yeah, so Len Bias died on June 19th, 1986, during a midterm election like we're coming up now in 2022. And politicians on both sides of the aisle really used that to push for stronger drug laws. There was a belief, a myth, if you will, that Bias died of crack cocaine. And there's evidence that was false. He died of powder overdose. That being said, this was used to kind of tackle the growing crack problem in the country. And eventually, there's a 100-to-1 ratio put on between powder cocaine and crack cocaine. If you were caught with even 1 gram of crack cocaine, you would get a mandatory minimum. And that really had such a disastrous impact on the Black community, particularly Black men. And even other states adopted Len Bias laws, where drug dealers who gave a fatal dose of drugs to someone would be put in prison for life or put in prison for a certain mandatory sentence. And so you see this not only at the federal level, but the state and local level as well.
It was thought that that was sort of the pipeline from went right to prison, that there was, you know, so such a proliferation of that drug at that time. I'm old enough to remember when it seemed it was everywhere. Now with Ben Wilson, it's a different story. He's a young kid with incredible talent, and people really are imagining him, projecting him to be a great star. Doesn't seem to be a kid that liked trouble or spent a lot of time getting in trouble. Sort of the wrong place at the wrong time, but then again, he gets that his death gets used to change other kinds of laws.
Yeah, as you mentioned in your preview of my chapter, There's a really crackdown on gangs in Chicago. Chicago's always been kind of a one of those ground zeros, if you will, for black gang violence in America. And Harold Washington really tried to crack down on that, but also is used to change, in a more positive note, emergency room policies, but getting someone to the closest trauma center because he was taken to a hospital that wasn't trauma center, and they kind of let him die. So it did have some effect on that as well. But yeah, both these stories were used by politicians, by the media, to kind of amplify, if you will, a crisis of the urban black male that you kind of see to this day.
If I remember correctly, the one of the people charged in Ben Wilson's killing was Willie Dixon's grandson, the great
Omar Dixon. Yes.
Yeah, and Willie Dixon, one of the greatest blues songwriters, singers, performers, recording artists. You could also talk about the story about how those lives were turned around after this happened, and it becomes a positive. Or we can look at what you've just pointed out, this sort of association of this kind of violence with young black men as being become an archetype or a stereotype that still exists in some pockets of the country.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I think one thing both documentaries do is they complicate the picture, right? I mean, I think there's a lot of about Lynn Bias and how he started the war on drugs that had been coming out by the early 90s, by the mid 90s. There are a lot of pushback against it finally. But I think one good thing that Without Bias does is talk to Brian Tribble, who is the guy accused of giving Lynn Bias a fatal dose of drugs. Was actually stereotyped in the media and politics as kind of the hanger on, the vulture. Yeah. Literally sucking the life out of Lynn Bias. And then with the Ben Wilson case, it's actually interesting you mentioned Willie Dixon. Omar Dixon ended up back in jail after the time in prison was served. Billy Moore, on the other hand, actually pulled a trigger, actually is kind of used as this reclamation story, right? He was able to turn his life around. And I really like that Benji hits on his story because, it complicates the narrative. They're supposed to be two hardened gangsters, and they weren't. Right. But yet, it was used just to, in essence, start a war on gangs in the city. And so you see how, I think the Brian Tribble story for Wild Bias is interesting because he was kind of a low-level drug dealer before, but this case actually made him a high-level drug dealer. Because of people are like, oh, you sold this to him. So it's kind of interesting how those life trajectories kind of play out and things like that, how the documentaries handle that.
Justin, this is Rich. I'm just curious, in both cases, but let's focus on the Bias case. Why was it so important for his story to fit the narrative that people wanted? Is it simply because that's easier to understand than getting into the complexities of real life and young men, regardless of their color, making bad choices?
Yeah, I think, you have to think about both Bias and Wilson, where they were, right? Bias was just drafted in the NBA, second overall. And you still drop dead when you're 22, right? Most of the time, especially if you're 6'8", 220.
Yeah.
And so I think even during the research, I knew about the outcry of his death, but just kind of the fervor of it was struck me. I think it was the wrong incident at the wrong time, basically, right? There's all these concerns about drugs growing and growing and growing. And then you have the ultimate incident. A black kid who finally made it, if you will, dying in the nation's capital down the street from Congress. And I think same thing for Ben Wilson. You know, he was the number one high school player in the country and essentially murdered, right, the day before his regular season was supposed to start. So I think, you know, certain stories resonate with certain people. And I think those stories, I think their accomplishments kind of elevated their stories, if you will, if that makes sense, to a degree that actually wouldn't happen if it was a regular Joe.
When I look back in the recent past of other African Americans dying when they sure shouldn't have, whether it's at the hands of the police or in gang-related violence. That part of the narrative that keeps coming back up is to put all the blame on all the victims. Where it seems like with bias, nobody wanted to give him too much responsibility for it. He had to be the pure victim, the pure, and that so fits the white media need, right? To be able to say, well, and this guy was different, and look what happened. Do you still see that in sports discussion now?
I think you do. I think in the bias case, they actually had their villain, but their villain was Tribble. So I think that was kind of easier said than done. But there's a rush either to blame somebody or blame the person itself for what they did. And I think we're in a day and age where that happens across race, just with Twitter and all those things. But I think particularly with Black athletes, you kind of become representative quickly of your race.
Right.
You even see it as something like what happened with Will Smith and Chris Rock at the Oscars. That became a referendum on Black men,
right?
In a certain way, which you don't really see with whiteness, right? You don't really see that becoming a referendum on white people per se. Right. But when Black people or Black celebrities step out of line, it kind of becomes a referendum on us.
Well, this is. It's a great book, and your chapter is really great. When you look out a little bit ahead, if you've got a minute or two, we can wrap up. If you look out ahead, do you see anything in the media landscape that is changing for the better regarding the way Black athletes are pictured? I mean, I'm not talking just about Colin Kaepernick or high profile people, but do we still see the Black athlete as somehow a different Black man than other Black men?
I think that the fact that you have more Black men and Black women in the sport media market, not enough, but do you have more voices, more vocal voices, the Bomani Joneses of the world and a lot of beat writers out there who are willing to speak up about certain situations. I think that's a definite improvement from the 1980s. But again, some of these issues are going to be there just because the demographics haven't changed that much.
Right. Well, Justin, thank you so very much for being with us. I just want to let people know again, it's Sporting Realities. It's edited by Travis Vogan and Samantha Shepherd. And Justin's chapter, To the Black Athlete Dying Young, Documenting and Mythologizing Len Bias and Ben Wilson, is a must read. If you're a sports historian, sports fan, and this is really, really top-notch stuff. Thank you very much, and I hope we'll be talking to you down the line again.
Thank you.
Justin Hudson with us here on Downtown Sports Lit 101. What's coming up next week, Bruce?
Next week, we're not sure because I'll be out of town.
Oh,
and
that's
as long
right.
as yeah. I think we'll be talking about another chapter from this book, or we may be talking about the March Madness book I was reading, but I may be playing with my granddaughters and and I may be phoning it in from Albany. So
sure. Well, you do whatever works for you, Bruce.
We'll make it happen.